Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host, the most Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Chris Sologi. Say hi to the good people, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, so this is for December 13th, 2025. And, yeah, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas, and it's driving me fucking bananas. All the radio stations are now playing fucking Christmas music 24/7, and it's driving me insane. And, you know, that's not, of course, all the other stuff going on at Christmas, like the decorating and getting the tree up and everything and Christmas presents wrapped. You know, when you're younger, you appreciate the fact that, you know, other people are doing this stuff. But when you're the one who's doing it, you realize, yeah, this is fucking boring. I hate doing this shit. This is why I preferred it when my parents were doing it. But anyway, among other things we will be discussing this week, among other things, just very recently had yet another mass shooting happen at yet another school, a university this time. We had a couple of more special elections that went to Democrats again. We also have the very real possibility that we might be going to war with Venezuela in the immediate future. We also discovered that Liam Neeson was doing a narrator role for something he probably should not have been doing. We got all that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend, including a bunch of entertainment-related stuff, including a trailer for an animated adaptation that just completely fucking missed the point. Really no other way to put it. But before we do all of that, before we get to there, we must, as is always tradition, start by talking about all the stuff we've been doing up to this point this week. And it's also a tradition, we start with Chris. So Chris, tell us what you've been doing this week.
Yeah, I've been working, we've had more, you know, cold weather, but also in there today, especially we got, seems like an inch or so work, so I didn't have to drive in. It's great. So that'll be, but yeah, for the things I've been doing, I watched Wake Up Dead Man, the new Knives Out movie, on Netflix now, and it's really good. So the general premise is that it is set in this, in and around this church that is run by Monsignor Wicks, played by Josh, has become this sort of, let's say, a priest who is very all about the cult of personality. You kind of learn early on, sort of really got to the point of having his flock that is, you know, only maybe like seven people big, as he's used his sermons to belittle like new people, or to the point of them leaving, you know, pretty quickly. And then he shows up for the, and it focuses on Father Judd is somebody who's had a history of violence, was a boxer that killed a man in the ring, but has, you know, found God and become a priest and all that, and sort of moves up to this church to help out and all that, and comes to like Wicks, so kind of trying to bring more positive vibes, maybe change the church, but finds a lot of opposition from Wicks and his flock and all that, and this all ends up leading to a point where Judd is giving a sermon. This is the week of Easter, so I think this is on Good Friday, and sort of looks over and sees Wicks fall over dead in this sealed room that it seems like, the flock hanging out in the front, and the cops come and try to figure out what's going on, and Benoit Blanc shows up to help out and kind of goes through all the ins and outs of, you know, investigating and figuring out what's going on, as he's kind of embedded himself, despite being, you know, gay and non-religious, as he talks about, and deals with the kind of, this whole thing was pulled off and everything that kind of goes on with that, which leads to kind of a nice like a series of events, sort of showing how all this stuff is going. Really well done performances here, good actors here, like Glenn Close. Jeremy Renner's pretty good here as the doctor whose wife has left him, kind of thing, and he kind of gets into bad mood. And Mila Kunis is the cop on duty for managing this investigation. Well worth checking out if you want to see another good whodunit. It's kind of more in line with the first movie in the sense of you're kind of along for the ride to figure out what happened, though. I guess the first one, technically, you already know what's happened. This one, you kind of really don't. So they kind of keep you in the dark. I guess kind of like the second movie, but then that one, unveils kind of what's happened and then rewinds to show the other side of what's been going on that you may not realize. This one kind of keeps you in the dark, but yeah, it goes places. Definitely worth it. I've also been just watching some Christmas movies and such. So I watched Die Hard 1 and 2. And Die Hard, especially, the thing I really notice is a lot of the score early on is Christmas music. Not even just like the songs that are playing, just a lot of their score in the early parts are just more versions of Christmas music, accentuate like an action movie kind of stuff, when it's a Christmas movie that the people that continue to push that it's not paying much attention to it. But yeah, still a lot of fun with that one. And two is also a similar idea, but it's John McClane trying to convince other people that the possibility for a really bad situation is turned away at key moments until it really gets to being a really bad place. Another fun, I think I didn't really realize until probably this watching that that is set in DC. The way it starts, where it's just like, gridlock and all this kind of stuff, maybe just think it's like a Dulles and Dulles Airport and saying they're in DC. I think I just never really, otherwise, outside of that stuff, there's nothing really descript about it being that part of the country. So just kind of a weird thing that ended up happening. But yeah, that's been pretty much what I've been watching. What I've been playing, I've been playing a bit more Metroid Prime, working my way through it. I've gotten past where I was before. I was kind of stuck in of sorts, or I didn't really puzzle, just unable to figure out what ended up being that. You're sort of starting up this factory, and like one of the parts is gonna be a sphere of Paul mode. Then you get picked up by this thing and sent to an area where you can do more stuff. The platform that normally would go up and down, just not do something weird to activate this thing. That just seemed confusing. But yeah, once I got out of that, everything else worked out. Got the new suit that you have to get to be able to use the Viola motorcycle. And then it kind of has you drive a little bit over to the next area. This is a vault for just kind of several towers that you have to go through. And they're pretty linear for their design. It's basically you're using elevators, so it's you go to one area, go down, go across to the other side, ride that elevator down, then go across and forth until you're at the bottom and you do a thing. Whatever lightning tower there, at the end you're activating this thing really happening to power up whatever systems it's controlling. And so the second one is much more, as much like that, except the first tower there's no real combat because navigation stuff. But the second one you get to has actual combat in it with the robots showing up, starting fights and such. Not really a boss fight, outside when you're activating the lightning tower. But it is one that takes a bit. One of those things where I had to scan it to understand what exactly I was supposed to. It's not a first boss fight. You have to use the psychic that's controlling multiple targets in succession for this thing. A bit tough to get to, but once I got through, which made sense because it's you're kind of in this big area that then empties out to the outside part. So I was like, okay, once I do this, I go back in, there's probably going to be some sort of boss fight. It ended up being a boss fight that purports to be the big bad guy, Silas or Silex, but ends up seeming like a robot again that showed up to imitate him for some reason, which was a neat boss fight. I think it was pretty well done the way it works because it requires you dodge attacks and do some good morph ball stuff under some of his dash attacks and such. You just kind of keep doing that until you beat him, and it's a pretty steady boss fight where you attack pretty consistently, but get up as he's like rushing at you, and so you gotta find ways to stuff. So after that, I went to the next tower, and then that one was the here we're gonna show you all the different thing, like test tracks type stuff to show you how the combat stuff on the bike works, which has some interesting ways of doing things. But it also tells me that's oh, there's gonna in that desert between the different dungeons. I hope this is more interesting because there's a lot of like lock on type stuff, but they also show you how to do the like Akira slide kind of stuff, which is neat looking though. That was pretty much that one. That's getting out of that and still progressing. There's that, and I've also been playing some more Clair Obscur Expedition 33. I finished the arena and happened to because you gotta pick one character for each of the rounds. Yes. Enemy in the tournament is one of the people in your expedition, as is I feel like the trope for any sort of tournament thing like this is always like, oh, the last one's gonna be somebody you know, and so that's a fun little twist there. But I ended up picking the right person for that, as the guide was telling me afterwards. I didn't check it ahead of time, but I was like, oh, you should use Mael because she gets the most of the three. But if you happen to not do that, you can fight the chief guy. But it was also like, and also you have to do that to get the other weapons two characters would give you if you used them. But it was also like those aren't supremely like, you know, better weapons, so you can kind of just get by without them. Mael at this point than the others have had in three options compared to the other most of the time. Especially having gone through the some of the merchants, so beat that and yeah, kind of wait, whatever Eski. That's pretty much where I'm at on that. Fun being that far in and seeing what they showed of that game. Like I don't think I've met Ben Starr's character. The main character is Charlie Cox, right? All right, Ben Starr. I've not met whoever the hell this guy is, so.
By the sound of it, by the sound of what you're talking about, you will pretty soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's considering how far you are now, yeah, you'll meet him not too far from now.
Yeah.
No spoilers, but you
Yeah.
will meet him.
Yeah, just seeing him during that, because I constantly showed him whenever they were showing. I might have been the only guy there. I think the others were all. I could be wrong on that. But yeah, that's been fun, and that's been pretty much.
Oh, well, as for me, I finished Neon White last night, and holy crap, that the last okay, so like actually the last two levels of the game actually aren't that difficult, but the one that is before them, it's called Marathon, and it is seriously the hardest level in the entire game, and it's also probably the longest as well, because obviously, like the levels in this game, they don't really take very long because the whole point of it is that you're kind of trying to speed run through them. But Marathon is exceptional because it's only like a little over maybe 2 minutes long, but there's so much frenetic energy happening through it that it feels a lot longer. It's very exhausting. It's essentially you're in the last portion of the game, you get introduced to a new soul card called Book of Life, and essentially what it does is it gives you the ability to target enemies and objects that can in like explosive barrels and stuff like that, and like teleport to them and like destroy them in the process. Well, What Marathon does is it makes that like the primary part of the whole game, of the whole level, but also combines it by putting it with every single other soul card you've come in contact with that whole game. That includes, the pistol that gives you the double jump, the rifle that gives you the charge, the shotgun that gives you the fireball maneuver, the machine gun that gives you, the bomb, and the other machine gun that lets you do the stomp, and finally the RPG that lets you like shoot out like a like an ex like a like a utility cord or whatever, like a grappling hook or thing. And you go through every single one, and every one of it is like heavily based around the idea like precise, like precision. You have to do precision because you've got to make sure that you've got enough momentum that you're going to be able to get through the next part of the level. And it is so easy to just accidentally like do it just off that you end up blowing the whole thing and having to start again. It's difficult, and it's especially difficult if you're trying to also get like the gift at the very end of it. It's literally the last gift you can get in the game, and if you want to get like the good ending, you have to get every single one of the gifts in this game so that you can get like all the memories and stuff back. And the last one involves like this thing where you're like having to climb this enormous tower that involves you, using Book of Life on like these balloon demons that help you sort of like, to go up and up and up. And then eventually you have to start using some things like you have to use the fireball a couple times and the rifle a couple of times, and it's all about precision. And it doesn't like it, there are a couple times where it's really not shown like a good like where exactly you're supposed to go. And let's just say it took me a couple of hours to finally get through it. It was a lot, but I did finally beat the game, and it's still really good. And if you have not played it yet, really should give it a shot. It's an incredible game, very fun. And it will make you feel like a much better game than you a gamer than you actually are. But on top of that, I've also been going through Path of Exile again, because it's been a while and I wanted to restart that, and kind of forgot like how difficult that game is starting out, because you're kind of underpowered when you start, and it takes a little while before you get strong enough that you can start like taking out as many of these enemies as you want to. But it's still really good, and honestly still better than Diablo, and that's not a slight to Diablo. Diablo's fantastic, but Path of Exile is actually just amazing. Really good shit. But yeah, that's as much as like I've been playing. Oh yeah, and I've also been going through Baldur's Gate 3 again because of reasons that we will be getting into probably tomorrow. But other than that, I've also been, books, reading, nothing new there. And like I said at the top of the show, Christmas crap, putting up the tree, decorations, all that stuff. It's tiring and it's tedious, and you know that part at in Christmas Vacation where, Chevy Chase's character falls off the roof?
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel kind of like that. Yeah. So that's what I've been doing. So you want to add anything before we move on?
Nope.
All right. In that case, it's now time to talk about everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And this week we're going to have a short little one because it ties into one of the stories we're going to be talking about tonight. And it concerns the nature of privateers. Now, Chris, do you know what a privateer is?
I probably know what it is.
Okay, so a privateer is basically a pirate that has government backing. So like someone like, say, Sir Francis Drake, who is like probably one of the most famous privateers of all time, or probably like for if we're going to talk about like the American Revolution, there was Captain John Paul Jones, who was very famously a privateer who worked on the on behalf of the American Revolution and was, captured as a pirate in the UK during the War of Independence. But essentially, how privateering works is, well, but first, before we do that, we have to talk about like what piracy is. Piracy is, if you're like in a really generic idea, like generically, act of robbery or criminal violence by ship. Or boat-borne attackers upon another ship or a coastal area, typically with the goal of stealing cargo and valuable goods or taking hostages. That's essentially more or less what piracy is. In the terms of privateering, it's specifically concerned with what is called commerce raiding, which is essentially a form of piracy, but it's done in the the situation of naval warfare and is usually done by either official government sanctioned naval vessels. So like, for example, a you like and it depends on like certain countries do this, some countries don't. It was really common during like the Napoleonic Wars, and like during the American Civil War, the Confederate Navy had like a bunch of commerce raiders that were part of their stuff. and then, by the 1880s, there were like steel navies that started showing up, and we had it in World War I and World War II. Anyway, the point is that in that case, it's like a pers it's like a naval vessel capturing another after all the men surrender, and then taking all the stuff on it, and then parceling it out. Piracy is when you do that, but without like an official government backing. Privateering is sort of the middle ground. You're an independent agent, but you're operating on the orders of and with the express written permission of some sort of government polity. And specifically, how they do this is through something called a letter of marque. Which is a delegated issued commission from a government. It's essentially a license to steal, more or less. And this is like a something that, obviously, letters of marque themselves are not new. They've been around since at least the late Middle Ages, all the way up to the 19th century. And technically, believe it or not, it's still on the United States Constitution that the President of the United States can, in fact, issue letters of marque to authorize privateering by independent agents. If you want to know where it is, it's in Article 1 of the United States Constitution. Look it up. And usually what would happen is they would issue these to like mercenaries. Fleets with private captains telling them, okay, you are authorized to go out on our behalf to steal shit. We get a cut of it and we let you keep some of it as well. And this is actually like how some notorious like pirates during the golden age of piracy actually got their start. I'm trying to think, like there's a couple of examples that are like very, I think like Captain Cook, no, not Captain Cook, Henry Morgan is actually like probably the most famous of this. He was a privateer who worked for obviously Her Majesty's government, and then he led like a bunch of assaults on Portobello and Panama City. And he ended up sort of losing his letter of marque, and he just decided to go, nope, I'm just a pirate now. Another good example is Captain Kidd, who was also a privateer, but was then later branded a pirate by an angry British naval officer when he fled, rather than, allowing his crew to be pressed into naval service, which, press ganging, it was really common back then. But essentially, yeah, that is what a privateer is. Obviously, because they're operating by like letters of mark and under government license, that does obviously mean that they have certain things that they are not allowed to do. There are certain parameters that they have to stay within. One of them, like I just said, being that it is not uncommon for privateers to have them and their crews press ganged into an official navy, which is exactly what pissed off Captain Kidd and why he ended up, fleeing like he did. And now, the reason that this is actually like starting to come up again, other than like, one of the major stories we're going to be talking about this week. In the 21st century, the power of letters of mark have started coming up again, at least theoretically. After the 9/11 attacks happened, then Congressman Ron Paul, yes, that Ron Paul, in 2007, he twice put up before Congress the idea of like authorizing letters of mark. And also, including not just naval piracy, but apparently also air piracy as well. He also advocated again in 2009 to deal with the issues of the piracy in Somalia operating in the Gulf of Aden. It also came up again a couple of years ago after the Russian invasion started in Ukraine, in order to seize yachts ordered owned by Russian oligarchs. And most recently, Senator Mike Lee, who is a sociopathic bastard of a human, but that's another story, has actually suggested consideration be given to the potential use of letters of mark and reprisal in efforts to curtail the presence of Mexican cartels. And like I said, it is still on the books in the U.S. Constitution that if the president wants to, he can in fact authorize letters of mark for private actors to engage in privateering on the orders of the United States government. But that's what privateering is. It's going to be important in a little bit, so keep it in mind, and we're going to end it there. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. And with that, we're going to go ahead and move on to the show proper. And it's also with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. And our first asshole of the week is this shit that went down in Michigan where they fired one of their football coaches for sleeping with a staff member, and then it all just gets worse and worse from there. This is a hell of a story.
This involves Michigan, former Michigan football coach Sharon Moore, who took over for Jim Harbaugh. That whole scandal where they had a whole system for cheating their way to a national championship, with all the evidence that came out for that. Sharon Moore, in the few games that Jim Harbaugh was kind of suspended for, he took over and replaced him for those games, and sort of ended up being the one that took over for the last 2 seasons. And this season he was sort of doing an all right job what he had to work with, and ended up getting fired the other day for cause. So the contract he had signed essentially was null and void, which a lot of these coaches sign huge deals, and when they get fired, they still get their pay, which could be tens of millions of dollars that the school is on the hook for. So that's the one way he screwed himself, partially because he was having an affair with one of his staffers, who apparently was like a, I think the 10-year-old girl is, let's see, 39 years old. With a wife. And so he got fired, kind of a big deal, and then you hear pretty quickly that he's been arrested, and it's sort of like a huge escalation, like what the hell happened here. And apparently because he upon having this go public, essentially found the went to the apartment of the woman that he had been having an affair with, threatened to kill himself in front of her and blame, like, this is all your fault, and all that kind of stuff. Apparently been having this affair for at least 2 years, the relationship, and alerted at the top of the school And so, yeah, like it says here, he stormed into the woman's apartment, then proceeded to a kitchen drawer, grabbed several butter knives and a pair of kitchen scissors, and began to threaten his own. He's quoted here as telling the woman, "I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to make you watch. My blood is on." So yeah, obviously she was terrorized. He was immediately arrested and taken to like a mental health facility first to get tested out before going to jail. And now he's been charged with at least three charges right now: felony home invasion, stalking, and I forget what the third one is, but he's certainly some jail time on top of this. But he's gone. Yeah, put in a not guilty plea, released from jail after a bond. Said very little in court besides acknowledging that he must have no contact with the woman, among other conditions. Yeah, and apparently there's a lot going on behind this as well. They played Ohio State a few weeks ago for their big game that they ended up losing. And apparently he was texting an OnlyFans during the, at a certain point, so definitely a guy that has had a lot going on behind the scenes, and that has caused a lot of problems. Made it seem like this is we're gonna find out more about this, because apparently he got the girl pregnant and used school funds to get her an abortion, and maybe also use school funds to get her a raise on top of that. So yeah, there's that's certainly why you would get fired for spending school funds to raises of, you know, people you're having in bed. So yeah, this is a whole shit show, and this guy certainly unhirable for the foreseeable future for any other jobs, just based on all of this. So yeah, he's certainly the cause of his own destruction, and he's ruined his kids and his wife's life with his own selfish fun times. The I think he's the seventh coach to get into legal trouble. That was on Jim Harbaugh's staff, so rivaling the Trump staffs there. And Jim Harbaugh got away and now is working in the NFL. He's basically got no consequence. There you go.
Yeah, did you get all that? That is a hell of a story. That's the type of shit they make Netflix documentaries about.
Oh yeah, I'm sure ESPN's on
Goddamn.
this.
Oh yeah. And then we got this story, and this one literally happened like maybe a couple of hours ago. Two people were killed, as far as we know, and eight were injured, again, as far as we know, in a shooting at Brown University in Rhode Island.
Yeah, apparently the suspect is still at large, as far as we know, but eight people are in critical but stable condition, so they should be okay. Yeah, there's a shelter in place order that was still active as of the writing of this article. Yeah, the shooting took place around 4 p.m. Eastern time. So yeah, awful situation, especially right before Christmas. People that were hoping to, you know, finish up what work they had left for the semester and go home and enjoy for the break, destroyed by this shooting. There you go. Find out more about this shooter, hopefully by next show, and wouldn't be surprised, because it's Brown University, that some who's mad about the corruption of the universities, the leftist indoctrination shit.
At this point, I'm not gonna take any chances, so
Yeah.
we'll find out eventually.
We'll find out.
Yeah. That happened, and then we got this story, and here we tie back into what I was talking about earlier. United States forces took control of an oil tanker off the coast of Venezuela.
Yeah, kind of the first in this kind of weird stalemate they're having with Venezuela is they're kind of certainly setting up like an invasion of Venezuela, but they're very much just having, you know, forces waiting in, you know, Puerto Rico and other places, other bases that we have. So this is their first whole thing, and the video of it looks that's shots of these guys, you know, landing on a helicopter, getting out with guns and pointing them at they're expecting this after them for whatever thing that's going on here. Yeah, this is a merchant ship Very unusual, but yeah, they're going after Maduro, his power, I guess, and part of that's oil. We'll see where this goes, but yeah, this is just a very ridiculous thing to be doing.
So yeah, like I said, the United States can technically authorize privateers to do shit, and if they're at war with someone, they can legally seize an opposing force's vessels and materials on it. Problem is, we have not declared war on Venezuela, so this is just straight up government piracy. Yeah, nice job, Trump administration. You just gave Nicolas Maduro the fucking moral high ground.
Yeah. And yeah, they posted this on social media. Your Pam Bondi posted it.
So yeah, I got that bullshit. And then last asshole of the week, crypto company founder Do Kwon. He was sentenced to 15 years in prison this week after losing $40 billion with his failed stablecoin.
Yeah, I think if you look at the Last Week Tonight episode about cryptocurrency, he was one. I think alongside oh, what's his face, Sam Bankman-Fried is one of the other people there. But yeah, this guy ran Terraform Labs, which he founded, and he pleaded guilty in August to fraud charges stemming from the collapse. And yeah, they seem to estimate there may have been 1 million victims in this. They touted their Terra USD as a reliable stable coin, kind of currency typically pegged to stable assets to prevent drastic fluctuations in prices. But it was an illusion backed by outside cash infusions that came crumbling down after it plunged far below its $1 peg. So yeah, they're trying to claim that this would always be equal to $1 US. And that they had, sophisticated system to always keep that tied into a sister currency called Luna. Went bad, and yeah, he got arrested. And yeah, let's see, yeah, he fled to the Balkans on a false passport. Been locked up since March 2023, when he was arrested in Montenegro. His credit for 17 months he spent in jail before being extradited to the U.S. He agreed to forfeit over $19 million as part of his plea deal. His lawyer argued his conduct stemmed not from greed, but hubris and desperation. They rejected his request to serve a sentence in his native South Korea, where he also faces prosecution, where his wife and 4-year-old daughter live. So yeah, the victims lost a lot of money here. Victim speaking by telephone said his wife divorced him. His sons had to skip college, and he had to move back to Croatia to live with his parents after Terra USD's crash evaporated. He said he has to live with the guilt of persuading his in-laws and hundreds to invest. Yeah, billions of dollars of their life savings and all that in this, and any sort of only invest what you're willing to lose, any of that stuff, even in stock. But she terrible, so he needs to rot. But I would not be surprised if Trump pardons him.
Probably. But yeah. So that's it for the assholes of the week. And to show that it's not all bad, we actually got a couple of pretty cool stories this week for heroes. And our first groups of heroes of the week are the bunch of senators down in the state of Indiana because they voted down the state GOP's redistricting bill, which basically deals a massive blow to Trump's redistricting demands.
Yeah. Especially because Trump was going off on them beforehand, saying voting it down, or else he's going to block all federal funds that they would need for, which is certainly a way to go. There was one of the GOP senators was very much like, "I'm voting no," attacking Tim Walz, used the R word to do so, and that was a line that he had that Trump crossed and all that. So. Yeah, 21 Republican senators voted against this to go with the Democrats to shoot it down. And ending that as something they were looking to essentially go from, I think, a 7-2 advantage over the Democrats to a map that would give them 9-0, most likely. And I'm sure they, among other things, saw that some of that stuff was not working out in some of the most recent elections. That's assuming that the numbers, the advantages they have in these districts stays the same, which is not how things have been going here since Trump got elected. Redistricting can make them as vulnerable, if not more so. He wants to make the people in those districts aware of what they've just now done. Give them another reason to vote against them. So yeah, there you go. Good stuff.
And so that was and it's amazing what the response was, 'cause Trump is acting like he expected that this was gonna go through with flying colors, and now he's like in threatening mode. Which isn't new, because apparently a bunch of those people, senators down in Indiana, were getting threats because of him. But then we move on to this other hero, which is a judge who has ordered Kimar Abrego Garcia's release from an ICE detention center, and he then, and well, they then followed it up with another order to block them from re-detaining him after he's released.
Because that's what happened last time. He got released, and then as he needed to check in, they arrested him right there. So yeah, he was released, and the judge here had saying that they figured they might take him back into custody again just hours after his release was ordered, which is good. Yeah, the order came as Abrego Garcia appeared at a scheduled appointment at an Immigration and Customs Enforcement field office, roughly 14 immigration detention facility in Pennsylvania. His lawyers sent an urgent request to the judge, warning that ICE officials could immediately place him back in custody. Instead, he exited the building after a short appointment, emerging to cheers from supporters who had gathered outside. I gave a little message. So yeah, good to see, because he's been through a lot. Obviously, he got picked up for, an apparent clerical error. Sent to El Salvador to be in the CICOP prison for, and then was able to get home, but got arrested by ICE, and then has this whole weird trafficking charge has been thrown on him just to punish him and try to paint him as a criminal and all this, and does not seem to be the case. So he's been through a lot. They've been threatening to deport him to Uganda, and so far I've not been able to successfully do that. So hopefully he gets to stay out in this court case in Tennessee, so we'll see where that goes.
Yeah,
But so
we
far,
will.
good news.
So yeah, we got that. With that, we're now going to move on from the show proper to the proper show proper. And our first major story for the night is that the blue wave continues, because we had two more special elections that happened this week. One of them in Florida and the other in my state of Georgia, and Democrats won both of them.
In Miami, Democrat Eileen Higgins won the mayor's race, being the first Democrat to win the mayor's race in 30 years. And that's good to see, because it's the way theirs works is that they run unaffiliated, but obviously you can look up people and see what party they associate with. And again, Miami, the Miami that votes for the mayor's race is different from Miami-Dade County. So while the county may be blue, the one specifically here, but this seems to be a sign of a change on that. And it's something ridiculous, like an 86-point swing, because the last mayoral one with, it was a multiple, if I'm remembering correctly, it was like the field was like five or six people. Yeah, here it is. Francis Suarez won with 78% of the vote. The second place was Max Martinez, who won with 11, or was at 11. That's 67%, and Eileen Higgins won with, I think, 17% or 19% of the votes. Yeah, I won by 19 points. So that's an 86 points. A ridiculous number
Yep.
there. To go from not
And keep it.
winning, you know, in
Yeah.
30 years to winning this race by 19 points.
And in Miami, of all places.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, do you know what a huge part of the population of Miami is?
Latino.
Not just Latino, Cubans. And a Democrat still won by like 19 point, by like a huge spread. That's crazy. But it
Yeah.
doesn't stop there. Because then we go down to my state of Georgia, and we had a bit of an upset happen here.
Yeah. There's one of your state house seats in a
Yep.
Trump district was flipped to Democrat Eric Kinzler.
Yeah.
And yeah, he was leading Republican Mac Guest by about 200 votes out of Mortal Returns, so very close race. Yeah, that's great news showing that,
Yeah.
you know, these districts are not guaranteed to vote the same way.
Yeah. And important another thing to know about Athens is that it is gerrymandered all to hell. Because Athens is a college town.
Yeah, I want to say
And
this was split three ways
yep.
and essentially created a situation where suddenly, you know, a solid blue district is now split those people up into different areas
Yep.
that can all vote solidly blue and potentially tip the scales.
Yep.
I think it was Memphis and Tennessee has had the same thing happen to them where it's one city split three ways, and
Yeah.
that stuff can backfire if you don't
Yeah.
do it right and you have the wrong message at the wrong time.
Yeah. I do need to point out, though, that Eric won his election by like 200 votes, which is really, really close. So, you know, he still won, but, you know, the margin was very small. So, you know, don't take it for granted.
Yeah. It
But,
seems like this maybe, or no, this or this is talking about the this I guess it's talking about the Georgia House, that it's potentially going to be below 100 seats for the first time in the lower chambers for the first time since 2005.
Yep.
And they
That's
won
right.
control for the first time since Reconstruction.
So yeah. But again, it's like we've had all of these special elections come about since Trump took office for a second term, and all but one of them has been won by a Democrat. And that one that the Republican won was by a far smaller number than they thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
So.
And like the I think it was the Texas Democrats party there has announced that they have candidates in every single race that they can for 2026 for the first time in ages. So the state Democrats parties need to be thinking that everything is in play and acting like it. Even if you don't have the greatest candidate, run for it. Because you know, with all this, so yeah, if Texas has the opportunity to switch anything, there you go.
Yeah. So yeah, we're moving on from there to the rest of the stuff we got this week. The House GOP has revealed their health care plan. All of that, of course, happening as the Senate failed to extend ACA subsidies.
Yeah. And as you can probably guess, this is yeah, so this would essentially let me see. Here's what they're proposing. 100-plus page package that focuses on long-sought GOP proposals to enhance access to employer-sponsored health insurance plans and clamp down on so-called pharmacy benefit managers. They're proposing expanding access to what's referred to as an association health plan, which will allow more small businesses and self-employed individuals to band together and purchase health coverage. They say it will increase the leverage businesses have to negotiate a lower rate, but critics say the plans tend to provide skimpier coverage than what is required under the ACA. It would also require more data from pharmacy benefit managers as a way to help control drug costs. This also mentions cost-sharing reductions for some lower-income people who rely on Obamacare. Those do not take effect until 2027. It does not include an extension of the enhanced tax credit for millions of Americans who get insurance through the ACA. But yeah, this is not anything that people want. Because people just want the tax credits to be extended so people get the rates that are more reasonable for what they, because anybody that's not working for an employer that's offering it, or, you know, self-employed, are going to see their rates skyrocket, especially after the Senate just voted that down. So yeah, that's where we're at, and this is not where it's going to go. And then Trump's just saying, well, we should give the money to the people and not the insurance companies. And it's like, oh, you want universal health care? Like, no, we don't want that. We just want to take the insurance companies out of the equation, which is universal health care. You put the government in charge of dealing with all the paperwork and the middlemen and all that. Then the insurance companies just have to fall in line if they want any business at all. This is how you could solve it, but you guys don't want it. Easily take a win here. Not what they want, so more shit. There you go.
Yeah, so we got that. And then we got, of course, a couple of bullshit Trump stories. He issued a symbolic pardon for former Colorado election clerk that tried to overturn an election because it was a state crime, not a federal one.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's one thing. He said on social, Democrats have been relentless in their targeting of Tina Peters, a patriot who simply wanted to make sure that our elections were fair and honest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she orchestrated a data breach scheme driven by false claims of fraud. So, this isn't going to do anything because she convicted of a state crime, which federal pardons can't do anything with. She was trying to work with somebody affiliated with Mike Lindell, which is hilarious to believe anything he says.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's that. And then we also found out that they're going to be sending $12 billion in one-time payments to farmers for tariffs screwing them over, the tariffs that they themselves started.
The business that Trump drove away to other countries. With soybeans, corn, other stuff that these farmers relied on, who voted for him, fucked them ass, and now they're sending $12 billion of tax payers' money to help them out. Hopefully the farmers realize that this is not a solution to their problem, it's just a band-aid, but we'll see. But there you go.
Yep, so we got that. And now we go to this other thing. Because remember how we've been talking about how some of those cases that were being brought against Trump's political enemies were shot down because of technicalities? Well, one of those technicalities was the fact that the prosecutors for those particular cases were illegally appointed. And one of those is Alina Habba, who is resigning as the top federal prosecutor in New Jersey.
Yeah. The appeals court ruled that she was She was unlawfully serving in that role. She posted saying that she's not quitting because of these legal challenges, but instead is resigning to protect protect the stability and integrity of the U.S. Attorney's Office. It was like, you're trying to saying this decision will not weaken the Justice Department and will not weaken me. She's going to remain at the DOJ as a senior advisor to the Attorney General for U.S. attorneys. So she's still going to be involved in things, but she's not going to be the one putting her name on things that will eventually, they'll find other ways to do it. James thing has already had another jury that shot it down, another charge. So, yeah. More success for that. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and then we got the crazy story that Mike Lindell wants to run for governor of Minnesota next year.
Following in the footsteps of one Jesse Ventura.
Yeah, except Jesse Ventura is not completely crazy.
At least he wasn't then.
Well, not then, at least.
But they do have similar look to them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's claiming he's gonna do this. He's officially into the race for Minnesota governor, in the hopes of winning the Republican nomination. That'd be hilarious because
Yeah.
he's run a pillow company. He's not and one that's failing, so
Yep.
that's not somebody you can be like, oh, I can run a state. Sure, they've figured it out in Minnesota that they don't want these kind of people. I would hope so, considering what happened, which eventually, there you go.
Yeah. So we got that. And now we got news that Warner Brothers Discovery is saying it will review Paramount Skydance's acquisition offer because after the news that, Netflix won the ended up giving out the highest bid, the entire entertainment industry and the Trump administration is losing its goddamn mind.
Yeah, I think Trump has said he doesn't really have any, especially because of Skydance, their coverage of him still being critical to a
Yep.
degree. But I think this is also just more of a thing you have to do for shareholders in reviewing these kind of offers.
Yeah.
Because theirs would be acquiring all of Warner Brothers Discovery's outstanding stock for $30 a share, which would be like $108 billion. But we also found out that part of that funding is also coming from Saudi Arabia, which then, has its own national security issues that people have raised with that. So, yeah, it just kind of leads to a fun situation here. And it's like for concerns about letting Netflix buy Warner Brothers, Paramount's one of the major news and, TV network companies buying a bunch of other channels and news media companies and consolidating that even further in ways that would be really bad. So,
Yeah.
yeah. They say that within 10 business days, that'd be this Friday.
Yeah. So we got that stuff to talk to worry about. And then this story came out. So Liam Neeson is basically in hot water over a role as a narrator, as a voiceover narrator on a anti-vaccine documentary. Now, there had been talk at first that people think this might have been AI that was copying his voice, but apparently that's not the case.
No, his publicist confirmed that it was,
Yeah.
and yeah, put out a weird statement in this saying we all recognize that corruption can exist within the pharmaceutical industry, but that should never be conflated with opposition to vaccines. Liam never has been and is not anti-vaccination. His extensive work with UNICEF underscores his long-held support for global immunization and public health initiatives. He did not shape the film's editorial content, and any questions about its claims or messaging, which is like, you should have known what this thing was about when you took the job.
Like, you should have at least read the script.
Yeah, because it's based on a 2021 book called Plague of Corruption, 80 Years of Pharmaceutical Corruption Exposed. That expresses skepticism towards vaccines, features discredited science, and includes an interview with Robert F. Kennedy, the current Secretary of Health and Human Services and a noted vaccine skeptic. He is a narrator in this. And I think my ultimate conclusion here is that Liam Neeson is, because if you remember, there was another scandal he had a handful of years ago where he admitted publicly in a way that he really did not have to. That's a friend of his, a black man. And so, in anger over that, he went out to the streets ready to kill any black person he found in retribution for this before realizing, the awfulness of that and kind of
Yep.
being ashamed of it. And it's like, okay, I get being ashamed of it and all that, but you also said this publicly. You're a fucking. He's not a good person, I would say. On top of that, leads to him
Yeah.
doing stupid things, especially like this.
Yeah.
So yeah, don't take it as like, oh, he's a great person. This is just a bump in the road. And it's like, no, I'm gonna say he's probably not a great person, and he's stupid on top of that, which means he's Gonna step on it, step on the rake.
Yeah. But yeah, moving on, we're now very much in the entertainment portion of the show. And our next story is Disney, because how there is no other very as uncontroversial as the Walt Disney Company is these days. They have made public that they are investing $1 billion in OpenAI, would deal to allow Disney characters on Sora.
Yeah. So you can tell that capitalism has changed because Disney used to have sort of a corporate mandate of protecting vicious.
Like to the point that they would actively sue like freaking daycare centers and people like that over like, you know,
Escaping
paint.
copyright law for the
Yeah.
last several decades.
Yeah.
And now they're like, we can make a bunch of extra money with AI shit. So we'll sign this deal and give them $1 billion. Let people make anything they want with Disney animated characters. Have Mickey, rob banks and Goofy have sex. They want, which seems like, man, Disney of like 10 years ago was serious with this. But because AI is the hot thing to bump up your stock price, this is what they want to do now. And so much there's another story that they went after Google, whose AI video generation stuff that people can, use for things. So again, they're, shitting in one hand and with the other. They're a really hypocrite with all this. Power to the shittiest people around. So there you go.
Yeah, but make no mistake, that bubble is gonna burst any day now, and it is going to wreck so many things.
You remember 2008?
Yeah, I also remember the dot-com crash.
This will be worse than 2008 because these companies are running up huge debts, expecting the government to bail them out. They're not trying to run companies that will be sustainable, which is not how it should work.
No. And it's coming. It's gonna happen. And it's getting closer and closer every second that that ticks down. That bubble is just fit to bursting. But anyway, moving on to something from Disney that's actually good. Zootopia 2 has become the fastest PG film ever to cross $1 billion globally.
Which has been the big thing. This one is doing incredibly well. It's taken 17 days to reach $1 billion, which is definitely a big surprise. They've done 232 million domestically and 753 million. And yeah, earn yeah, and hit $1 billion on Friday. And only third movie this year to join the $1 billion club on Stitch. And the Chinese animated blockbuster in Asia too. And it's one of only 13 animated movies to ever surpass $1 billion. Ten of
It's
which are
true.
Disney.
So that's actually good news. And then we got this bit of bullshit. So McDonald's Netherlands put out an AI-generated ad that was so bad that they ended up pulling it very quickly after a massive backlash.
Yeah, I don't know if you've watched this thing.
I do not care to, but
It's see how quickly you're like, oh, this is it. It's
you
like,
know what? Screw it. I'll go ahead and watch it. Give me a second. Oh
let's
dear
see where
God,
it
that's
goes.
horrifying. All right.
Doesn't help that the video here uses one of the worst parts as the thumbnail, because it's a pretty simple.
Oh God, yeah, this is so obviously AI, like.
Yeah, it's a simple premise of, oh, it's the most wonderful time of the year, but actually, what if people are having a bad time? And it's like, yeah, these are all situations that are bad, but also, you could have had humans do this stuff.
No, seriously, you could have with like, I mean, all, none of this requires any kind of like extensive like digital editing or anything. This is like stuff you could have easily filmed on a set.
Yeah, there's like a guy slipping and then his legs morph into one leg.
Yep.
And yeah, they put out a the company that made this put out a statement being like, for 7 weeks we hardly slept with up to 10 of our in-house AI and post specialists at the gardening club working in lockstep with the directors. Every shot traveled through a rigorously engineered tool chain, real Google Earth plates, advanced style transfer, pixel level photo repair, custom LoRAs, controlled nets, bespoke comfy UI graphs, thousands upon thousands of tightly steered iterations, inking, compositing, light balance, physics correction, all this. We generated what felt like dailies, thousands of takes, then shaped them in the edit just as we would on any high craft production. This wasn't an AI trick, it was a film. And here's the thing I wish more people understood. Magic isn't the technology. Magic is the team behind it. People who pushed, questioned, experimented, swore at broken models, solved impossible problems, and refused to stop until every frame felt cinematic.
And you still screwed up.
Yeah, I don't see this spot as a novelty or a cute seasonal experiment. To me, it's evidence of something much bigger, that when craft and technology meet with intention, they can create work that feels genuinely cinematic. So no, AI didn't make this film. You're terrible at this.
Yeah, you suck.
Like, it sucks that you crunched for 7 weeks to make a piece of shit ad.
Yeah.
It's like the only way this is tolerable is if you have it on a TV that you're not looking at for the
Yeah,
entirety of
seriously.
it. Then you're like, oh, that was an ad, but I didn't notice anything about the nightmare that's sprung forth from the
Seriously.
prompts that they. And it's like, don't do this. Coca-Cola's done it again for another year. And it's just as bad as it seems like it would be.
Yeah, it's hot garbage. So yeah, that crap happened, and now we're moving on to some trailers and teasers. And the first one, we got an official trailer for an adaptation that completely lost the frickin' plot. It's an animated adaptation of George Orwell's Animal Farm, and
Yeah.
God, it looks awful.
Yeah, this is the Andy Serkis movie that he's been pushing for 10 years.
Yeah.
And yeah, it changes the message a bit to be a bit more about capitalism, I guess. They still mention communism here. I had to look up the story for this because I wanted to see what the original story was that they hint at through this trailer.
Basically, all you need to know is that the story of Animal Farm is essentially an allegory of the history of the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
The whole idea is that the animals are on this farm, and eventually they're getting fed up with a farmer, and then one of the pigs, a old boar named Old Major, decides that, you know, it would be a good idea if we overthrew the humans and, you know, ran the farm ourselves on our own terms, which they do, and then Old Major dies, and then this other pig comes in named Napoleon, who sort of takes over, and he's more or less the Stalin analog, and his you know, he ends up like driving a guy named Snowball, who's like the equivalent of Trotsky, off of the farm, and it's, you know, that's the whole thing. It was
Yeah.
that's the whole point of the story, and they completely freaking flubbed it.
Yeah. Essentially, the pigs take over and essentially and turn into humans. And yeah, I was like reading up on this and it's like, oh, he wrote this in the 40s, is like in the wake of World War II, sort of the Soviets being, you know, a forced ally to defeat the Nazis. But you know, him writing, all right, we'll be okay with you for now, but there's still plenty of reasons not to be cool
Like
with
you, yeah.
communism. Yeah. And that's a bunch of.
Well, but specifically with Orwell, not be cool with Stalin, because
Yeah.
Orwell was very much a convinced socialist. He
Yeah.
just was not a fan at all of Stalin and what he was doing in the Soviet Union. Remember, Orwell was a veteran of the Spanish Civil War. He fought with the anarchist in Catalonia, and he saw what the Soviets' allies and secret police ended up doing to those people after the war, during the war. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
And like him trying to find a publisher for that book took a while because all the big ones refused. Yeah.
Yeah, nobody wanted to touch it because, they were just off the end of the war,
They're
and,
like, we
you
can't
know.
be, doing anything criticizing.
Yeah.
And nobody
It's too
wanted that
soon.
until some small company took it up. And yeah, this is an adaptation of that is seems like it tries to dip too much into the, average kids animated movie kind of thing
Yeah,
versus
it has
what's.
the it's it has that whole like blue sky thing to
Yeah, like
it.
we're gonna,
We're gonna
we're
be
gonna get
funny
out
and
of the,
quirky.
yeah, we're gonna get out of the grasp of this evil farmer, and we're gonna make something of us. And look at the humans; they like the farm that's run by animals, and that's fun. And then the one pig runs for office or something. I don't know, there's like a whole thing where it's like a political thing, and it's like, oh, where did this come from? It also has a stacked cast, like Seth Rogen, Gaten Matarazzo, Steve Buscemi, Glenn Close, Laverne Cox, Kieran Culkin, Woody Harrelson, Jim Parsons, Andy Serkis is obviously in it, Kathleen Turner, Iman Vellani. And it's like, boy, you got a lot of expensive people here for a movie that looks terrible. And then it got picked up by Angel Studios, who, if you don't
Is that should
remember,
have been the kiss of death right there.
yeah, who produced the Sound of Freedom, and also is largely like doing a lot of religious movies, and I guess is run by Mormons or something. Or they're heavily influenced by Mormons. They do a lot of religious movies and such. But are branching out to some other stuff, and this seems like the other stuff. So yeah, unfortunate. Andy Serkis doesn't seem to have much luck with.
No, he doesn't.
And he's still looking to his face golem. So maybe that goes better. That's something he own creativity into. But yeah, this is out May 1st. If you have, there you go.
So, we also got an official trailer for the Copenhagen Test.
Yeah, this is a new Peacock series that will, let's see, yeah, be debuting December 27th. It's an espionage thriller series following, yeah, first generation Chinese American intelligence analyst Alexander Hale, played by Simu Liu, who realizes his brain has been hacked, giving the hackers access to everything he sees and hears, and working for, I assume, the CIA. Realizing this, they try to use that for their own advantages to figure out, who the hackers are, what's going on here, and catch the people involved in all that. Which is a neat premise for a thing, and this looks like it could be pretty fun. So there you go. That one looks neat.
And we got also we got a teaser trailer for the drama.
Yeah. This is a new A24 movie that features Zendaya and Robert Pattinson, where they play, a couple that's about to get married, and like a dark comedy kind of thing. As you might figure out, that things don't go well for the couple, I guess, based on what the trailer is going to go someplace pretty neat. That'll be out. Ape check out.
And last but not least, we got a teaser trailer for Supergirl, which is not a James Gunn directed movie. I want to point that out.
No, this is directed by Craig Gillespie from a screenplay by Anna Nogueira, who I believe is one of the who's done a run of Supergirl for that. So yeah, this will be out June 26th, and yeah, sort of told from her perspective, which I believe her whole story is that she was on what the fuck was the Krypton around there. escaped just in time versus Superman, who was a baby. At least that's my read on things. I don't know if that's the specific. She's dealing with the sort of fallout of all that, as she's decided to cope with the death of Krypton and most of her people by drinking herself stupid and getting into fights and shit. And so that seems like what this is going to be a lot of. Lobo's in here, played by Jason Momoa. He shows up real briefly in this. Yeah, seems like she go and do some stuff. So looks pretty neat out in the summer to check out. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it looks good. And I can't wait to see it. But yeah, with that, I do believe we have got ourselves a show for this week, folks. Yes, we do. We've got ourselves a show. So I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, RSS, or basically any kind of podcast aggregate you can think of. And if we're not on there, just give it 5 seconds or whatever. We'll be on there eventually. So we're going to go ahead and wind it down here. Thank you, Chris, once again for joining me on this little endeavor. All of you out there listening, if you enjoy what you hear, whether you're a new person just discovering us for the first time on Smashpad, or you're somebody who's been with us since the very first show, please do not hesitate to share us with your friends, your family, your casual acquaintances, your mortal enemies, and everyone in between, because they may hate you, but there's a good 50-50 chance that they'll like us, and that sounds like something that'll benefit everybody, I think. But yeah, we're going to go ahead and end it here. Join us next week. Christmas is coming up very soon. And honestly, shit's getting weird. And colder, might I add. Holy crap. In fact, I'm looking at what the weather's going to be like in the coming days, and damn, it's going to drop like crazy down here. So hopefully I'm not going to turn into a giant ice block. But if I do, hopefully I'll be melted enough that we'll be able to do a show next week. So see you all next week, folks. Good night, everybody.